Remember the days when football games were fun and you went home with a smile on your face? Remember how the sweet sight of the ball hitting the back of the net made the hairs on the back of your neck stand up? Remember when you turn up to an away game, confident that your team wasn't about to undo all its good hard work from the weekend before? The Tireless then remembers. Sadly, that's not quite what we're used to in 2017, as the Royals slumped to a 2-1 defeat away to Sheffield United, and you could forgive a few envious glances being shot towards the home fans on Saturday, as the strong away following, thanks to free coach travel, came away empty-handed. You get what you pay for, I suppose, and welcome to episode 141 of the Tireless End podcast with myself, Mark Mayo. I'm joined this week by Alan West. Westy, how's it going, mate?
Good, Mark. I'm very good. How are you finding your new job in charge?
Yeah, it's good, as I said a minute ago. I'd hoping doing this on the first take for the intro today. Didn't have the luxury of doing that last week. I made Steve Hoops sit there for a good 5 minutes while I fumbled my way through a number of takes.
All comes in time, Mark. That's how I saw the right out as well. It's not as easy as it looks sometimes.
Exactly. That's the thing. Wim did make it very easy. And we'll crack on then. Just a quick word for the Patreon campaign. Is very much back up and running for how we've taken control of it and taken charge of it. Anyone donating, anyone who wants to donate, go to the Patreon campaign. Simply Google it. And also, anyone, if you're listening to this podcast, doesn't follow us on social media, we are there on Facebook and Twitter. And we also have a YouTube channel, so keep an eye on that. And we'll kick on now with the recap.
The Tilehurst End Podcast. Read the blog on thetilehurstend.com.
So, after a very enjoyable 1-0 win over Leeds, pretty much everything you needed in that game going for us, we then go to Sheffield United, a kind of similar game against a team that are also doing quite well, probably even better. And we think that we're into a new era, perhaps, of Stam's management, and yet it isn't that, is it?
No, it was very similar, same old, same old. It was a surprise to me. I know we didn't have Bob Varson, and that did change things. But I thought he might look at another plan, because obviously it works so well against Leeds. We managed to keep a clean sheet, which, let's face it, we don't do too often nowadays. Mm. We looked like a threat. We was better going forward. He's gone back to a similar sort of style that we've been losing at every week, and we've got the same result out of that. We've got defeated. But I would like to say one thing. I mean, Sheffield United have come out of the league below, so you'd have thought that Reading would have had the better side, really. But the way Sheffield United played, I was super impressed with them, and if they can carry that on for the rest of the season, there's no reason why they won't go up two divisions.
Yeah, well, this is kind of what I'm worried about, in a sense that Stam clearly estimated Leeds correctly. He clearly got the game plan right. He knew what they were going to be like, and yet he seems to have underestimated Sheffield United in a way, hasn't he? He's gone back to this sort of, was it 4-3-3? Was it a 3-5-2? We had Bakuna back in midfield with Van den Berg. There wasn't a striker, as you say. Sam Smith wasn't given the run out. If we were playing a 4-4-2, perhaps he'd have been up front with someone like Barrow just to make it work. Mm. But instead, he's decided to go with kind of a Luko in centre mid with Behrens and Barrow up front. And I just don't think that it was the right approach, the right impetus to have for a game away to a team that's doing well.
Square pegs and round holes, would you say?
Yeah, very much so.
Because I think that Bacano, when he played at left back the other week, I thought he was exceptional. Right back, sorry. I thought he was exceptional. And again, I'm not one that, if it ain't broke, don't try and fix it.
I was just about to say.
You know what I mean? He looked like he played excellent. I mean, there was that last ditch tackle in that Leeds game. He looked a better left back than what we've got available. Mm. So why not keep him there? Because let's face it, we've got lots of midfielders, haven't we? We've got lots of central midfielders.
Yeah.
So it was a surprise to me that he put him back in there. We know he can do a job, but I thought the performance he gave the week before obviously earned him the right to take that position again. And we've seen the other players that have played down in that defensive role, and it seemed to work the week before. So I don't understand why he decided to switch that about. Because let's face it, Sheffield United could have had 3 or 4, maybe 5 goals. It was only for a bit of good goalkeeping and a few chances missed that they blew us away in the first half. And it just doesn't seem to learn from his errors. Now, I'm thinking, if you've got a Luko up front and you've got Barrow up front, you've got two players that are blessed with a lot of pace.
Yeah.
So why not play a bit more into the channels? Why not get them chasing after the ball? Why not tell them to get on the ball and run at players? But it just, we didn't have the ball long enough to make any impact on the game, especially in the first half. And then by the time we had scored, the game was over. And I think Sheffield United would have come away very disappointed with a draw if Reading would have nicked something in the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, I think us nicking something would have been very similar to Villa potentially nicking something off us earlier in the season.
That's exactly what I thought when I come up to that. It's exactly a similar sort of game. That Villa could have easily nicked something against us and they wouldn't have deserved that. And this was similar. But again, it's another away performance where Reading don't look like winning away from home. And at the moment, last year, there was a lot of games last year that we didn't look like we was going to win away from home. But our home form was sort of saving us. But this year, we're not picking up them points at home that you'd have thought they'd have got. And away from home, still, they don't look like a threat in games for long enough to win them.
But I find it quite bizarre in a way, because we've got the midfield. We are effectively trying to out-midfield our opponents with the sort of three-man setup, even Aluko dropping deep and having Gunter and Blackett effectively push on to join that midfield as well. And yet, we don't seem to join the dots. We don't seem to have the midfield helping the defence or the attack. They're kind of in no man's land. You watch the first goal, I think Joe van den Berg is nowhere near the play.
No.
As it comes back out to Paul Coutts, great finish, but effectively you need a man in the D, or at least near it, to clear the ball. The second goal, again, it finds its way into the box too easily, and no one is picking up Billy Sharp. No one has a, you know, as far as I'm aware, no one even knew he was there.
No, yeah, he just completely stood on his own, and he's got a tap-in, and Billy Sharp's been well known for scoring tap-ins.
It can't be a surprise, can it?
No, it's not a surprise. Everyone knows about him. It's just odd to me that a team that, again, is going middle-heavy with players can't keep more clean sheets. I don't know why they're not going away from home thinking, do you know what, we've got two quick players up front. Let's sit in, make ourselves difficult to beat and try and hit teams on the break, because they've got players that are more than capable of doing that. So why don't they do it? Because it's clearly not working. So you've got to try something different, haven't you?
Well, I think one of the players that I want to talk about is Aluko. And I think the way that he's been deployed and the way that he's been playing, obviously, you know, it's not always fair to talk about a player's price tag and the fact he was, you know, 7 million, 5 million, whatever you want to think it was.
Yeah, whatever it was, we're still not sure.
Yeah, exactly. But then he's been put in a number of positions now, and I'm not sure we've seen a good performance out of him in any of the positions.
No, he seems like he's being used as a... Yes, we know he's a good player. We know what he's capable of doing. I think he's shown flashes of good play, and he does...
He's come up with the odd assist, hasn't he?
Yeah, and again, he had a lot of assists last year, but we know he's not a goal scorer in particular, but you still would expect him to be getting, in a full season, you've got to be looking between 10 and 15 goals in the advanced position that he plays. As a minimum, really.
Well, we thought he was going to be a plug and play, sort of straight into the system, knows what to do, can link the play and everything midfield. That's what we were, you know, paying for.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to have a position that he likes to keep him in, though, does he? He just seems to sort of, again, square peg in a round hole sometimes. You'd have thought of a player of his ilk and the fact we paid so much money for him, the team would be made around him to a certain extent to suit how we can get the best out of him. But at the moment, that doesn't seem to be happening, I don't think.
Well, that's why he's been moved around positions so often. It's because he's being moved for the team as opposed to the team being moved for him. And I think he is that sort of player. I agree that if we're going to have pacey players up front, then stick him in a creative position. Whereas, as far as I can tell, at Sheffield United, he wasn't in any position in particular.
No. And I think another interesting thing when you look at that side is there are so many players in that team that seem to get moved around into different positions. And they say, well, they can play a number of positions. I always worry about players that can play a number of positions, because normally it means there's not a position where they're nailing down.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I mean, van den Berg, he sort of plays in a defensive midfield role, and then the next minute he's centre-back. And Bakana, one minute he's playing midfield, next minute he's left-back. Do you know what I mean?
And he does well at left-back, then he goes back to midfield.
Yeah,
so
that
actually works for once, and then it goes away again.
Randomly, that's what happened. But it just seems to me that no one in that side at the moment is nailing down a spot in that team. And even players that, I think, when you look at Reading's side, especially defensively, they've got so many good, I think, good championship defenders. But there's not one, apart from probably Moore, who's brave in his defending, there's not one of them that you could say, well, they should definitely start every week because they're pulling up trees. Because there's not. There's not one player in that side that I think this year so far that I can say, do you know what? I can't believe his name's not on the team sheet. Because there isn't one, is there?
No, there's not. And we're full of a team of players who are jack of all trades, master of none.
Yeah.
That's the phrase, isn't it? That's just, you think about Thiago Alori as well. He's a very quick defender. He's technically sound. But do we see that speed really enough? Do we see the defensive quality of having good speed? Do we see how he can get us out of tricky situations on the ball? You don't see any particular thing and you say that is what he does for the team that brings us points.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, I think it was missing McShane, weren't we, against Leeds, and you thought that would have been a big miss, but it wasn't. And it just doesn't seem to me that anyone is saying, you know what, I should be starting every week. And you need at least 4-5 of them players that should be starting every week. And at the moment, it wouldn't bother me who got dropped and got put in, because no one's nailing a place down.
Yeah, I find it interesting. One of the things I've noticed after this game is that the complete lack of draws that Reading have on the road is absolutely stunning in a sense. You think that, especially in the Championship, it's a draw-heavy league, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
And I'll come on to this in why I'm doing so bad in the prediction league a bit later, is because I keep thinking we're going to draw. But in away games in particular, Reading have drawn once away this season, only twice last season. That is 3 in 30 games on the road. It's amazing.
That's an amazing stat, because you think, just like you said, there's so many teams that are much of a muchness that you think you'd grab a lot of draws from away from home. But it seems that Reading sometimes are too easy to beat, and they're not too difficult to break down, if that makes sense to everyone.
Because
they're not keeping clean sheets away from home, or rarely keep clean sheets away from home. I just think they need to go in with a different plan away from home and just sit in, be deeper. Sit in, stop teams scoring against them, and then try and play on the break, especially when they're playing without players that are recognised centre forwards.
Yeah, you think it'd be straightforward and common sense, wouldn't you? But that's kind of what we're lacking at the moment. And there is no momentum, especially this year. We're the 22nd best team at home this year. Last year, we could afford to, week in, week out, go back to Nowodzowski and win pretty reliably. That's not the case at the moment. We're 22nd worst team at home, and it's just impossible to gain any sort of, you know, the teams of old, obviously, any team in football knows that a win at home and a draw away, you'll keep that momentum at least, you'll bring it into the next game. But we're just not doing it. And I ended this the recap last week on the question, is Stam learning his lessons? And we now know the answer to that is no.
Yeah, it was clearly no. Again, I'm not going to sit here and say I'm a better manager than Yap Stam, because clearly I'm not. I don't know anything. I wouldn't say I know anything more about football. I certainly know a lot less about football than he does, but I certainly know about Reading. And I do know that in years gone by, we've always had decent strikers, and we've always been pretty good at home in general, especially over the last sort of 10 years or so. But at the moment, you see, he's gone back to a formation and a team that was getting beat weeks before against teams like Millwall. And he's put them out against teams like Sheffield United, who are clearly doing well this year. And I don't think anyone's surprised that we've got the same result.
Yes, well, I think we'll come on to Stam in particular a little bit more, because there are plenty of questions in the mailbag on Stam, as you can imagine.
And this is one thing you need to get used to. If you do badly, you get a lot of...
He's going to be up for the Hal Robson-Cardo Award at this point, isn't he?
I
don't think we've ever had that go to a manager.
No, I don't think we've ever gone to anyone but Robson-Cardo, but there we go.
Well, we'll find out, and we'll get on to... There's not really any news this week, other than, I mean, Danny Lode is still at the World Cup, the under-17s, playing on Wednesday. So we're going to go to a pub chat now.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
So recently we've been running an article on the website, and also has spilled over on social media, as a lot of these things do, discussing how statues might be incorporated into Nowodzowski Stadium and who might be incorporated into Nowodzowski Stadium as a statue. Before we start this, Westy, I'd like to throw some names at you, just to see if any of these take your fancy. We've got Steve Coppell, John Nowodzowski, the 106 team in general, I suppose, Robin Friday, Morris Evans is another one, Martin Hicks. Where do you stand on the statue debate?
Very still.
It's the best way to stand, isn't it?
Statues. I think Sir John Nowodzowski would love a statue of himself outside the stadium. I'm sure he would really go for that. Whether I would or not, I'm not so sure.
Well, doesn't he still live there? So he can look out from his window every morning himself, and see himself. Yeah. That'd be great.
Coppell, yes. Definitely. First manager to take us into the Premier League. Highest finishing position we ever had. Probably the best footballing side I've ever seen down at Reading since I've been going, certainly. And I'm sure before that, there was no better. Robin Friday, it's an interesting one, Robin Friday, because Robin Friday, his legend goes further than he ever did, really.
It does. It supersedes it in a way.
Supersedes him, because everyone waxes Liverpool at Robin Friday, but... Probably if you went around that stadium now or Saturday and you spoke to people, you probably only have about 10 people that actually see him play football.
Oh, yeah.
Wouldn't you? I'm sure he was a great player, don't get me wrong. But again, his legend is bigger status than he ever had. Martin Hicks, a player that I know very well from when I was first started watching Rennie. Obviously, he was captain at the time. Played many, many games for him.
I think the most appearances of any player.
Went on to be a postman like myself, so well done, Martin. Morris Evans, again, he'd done a lot of hard work for the club. I mean, not just as manager, as coach and scout and all the other jobs that he took for Reading. I know his family personally, actually. I know his daughter. And his granddaughter, and I'm sure they would love a statue of him outside the ground, and it'd be a worthy statue as well. But again, I don't know how that would relate to the fan base as it is, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, as a younger quote unquote fan, rapidly losing that status, I think that having someone from the Elm Park here, someone like Morris Evans, I think would be a really good thing, because it'd be educating in a way. It would let us know that there was a football team in this town before 2003.
I think there's only a couple of fair ways to do it then. I suppose it'd be, everyone loves a goal scorer. Do you know? And if you are the record goal scorer at the club, then maybe that's an opportunity for you to have a statue. And I'm just looking at your sheet here, and there's a player that I see lots and lots of, was Trevor Senior. Mm. And obviously he's a top goal scorer at the club. And that record will remain forever, because I can't imagine anyone in modern day football staying at a club long enough to score that many goals.
No, and that's the thing I was going to say with Martin Hicks as well. As the appearance owner, is someone going to take that off him? 512 games, I think it is.
It's not going to happen, is it?
That's 10 seasons, and we don't have that these days.
No, it's just not going to happen. And then Trevor Seaney obviously went to Middlesbrough and came back to Reading. That'd be a good one. Again, it's one of my boyhood heroes. Maybe for just personal reasons, I'd pick that one. Koppel, I don't think you could argue with that. As he was the first and will always be the first. There's no one going to better that. Although yeah, they could, his side could be bettered, but again, you can't see that happening in the near future. I wouldn't have thought. So yeah, there's a few others, like you say, Archie Lovell, Jimmy Quinn, obviously manager, and scored a lot of goals for Reading at the time. But it's not, they haven't got records that won't be broken.
Yeah, that's the thing. If someone's going to be there, they have to be a permanent, you know, it's a permanent feature of statue. They have to be permanently recognised.
That's right.
And there's no point having someone there who is going to have their moment in the sun overshined.
No, that's right. And what was the consensus then? What did people say?
Well, I think there's a lot of backing for Koppel or Medeski. But the thing is with Medeski is that the stadium's named after him. So you need a stadium naming and a statue.
Yes, but the stadium might not always be
named
after
him. That's the thing. I do think that at some point in the near future, the Medeski Stadium will be no more as we know it. And therefore, I think it's only right for us to have a statue there as replacement.
Yeah, I think that as time goes by, I think when Sir John sadly passes away, I think that is when the statue will go upside the ground.
Mm.
Because obviously his influence on the club, whether you like him or loathe him, his influence on the club has brought a club that was, let's face it, a small club in a big town, to a biggish club. You know what I mean? He's done really, really well from when he took over to what could have happened, and the fact we could have been the Thames Rally Royals and we could have gone broke, and there's lots of things that were going on around about the time, or just he came out just after all that. He has turned the club around and made them a club that are capable of getting the Premier League and have been in the Premier League. That was under his stewardship, and I think when we move forward and we look back in history, I think he will be remembered fondly in the club archives and in obviously the history books. So I think he will get one, but I think unfortunately statues normally come when you're not about anymore.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is it depends how quickly the club want to act on this. It doesn't really seem like there's much desire at the moment to do it. We've certainly not heard anything that they're going to be doing anything. I think one of the things that you maybe need in a statue is a particular moment to be encapsulated, like the 1-60, maybe a few players lifting the trophy, or Koppel with the trophy in his hand. We've had Archie Lovell sort of aeroplane celebration, the Trevor Senior after scoring versus Arsenal in 87. I think Loyal Royal tweeted us in with that one as a potential, you know, moment to capture. And maybe you can have one as recent as the Wigan playoff semi-final, something that sort of encaptures that from 2002, I think it was.
I was just thinking in my head when you were talking, I was thinking it'd be nice to have one of a statue of the captains holding up trophies. Do you know what I mean?
All of those captains holding up all of our trophies.
Yeah, but unfortunately, if you become a successful team, that's going to have to go all the way around the stadium. So that could be a bit tricky later on down the line. But yeah, it's I think that you have to do something extra special to get a statue. And I think all the other clubs, when you look around, people have got statues, your Brian Cloughs, them sort of people. Mm. Do you know what I mean? They've done something special, and unfortunately not with us anymore. And I think that's when you get a statue. And I think Sir John will get one, and probably rightly so, but he won't get one now unless he pays for himself and puts it there.
unless he forks out. Do you think we need one then? There's a lot of talk about stadium identity. The Medeski Stadium is often derided by many people as having a lack of identities. identikit, all those sort of words get thrown at it. It depends as to whether you want to invest in naming the stands or put more physical things inside the stadium, such as flags, such as, I don't know, banners that people can hold up and such before the game.
Yeah, I don't think it particularly needs one. I think sometimes with these sort of things, it'd be fans' voices that get things done. You know, if there was a real need for one, for example, if someone was to pass away, then obviously a lot of fans would say, this is what we should do to mark.
Well,
that.
Like we had with Eamon Dolan in the North Stand.
Exactly. And I think that's the only time that fans will clamour to do things like that. Otherwise, it just looks like a bit of a gesture of nothing. Do you know, it's just let's put it up now and just try and make a feature of it when really it's not representing anything.
Yeah, it needs to come on like an anniversary or something like that. Or I mean, we've had our 10-year anniversary for the 106 team, so we'll have to wait a few years for that. I don't know what sort of anniversary is coming up with Robin Friday. Aren't they making a film about him?
They was making a film about him a long time ago, so whether they pulled it or I've not heard anything about it since.
I have to keep up on that, but yeah, maybe on release day we can have a
Robin
Friday.
I know his daughter actually, so I might ask her, but yeah, I don't think they've finished it, that's for certain.
No, I don't think they have. We'll keep an eye on that and we'll go on to what you guys are thinking with the mailbag next up.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.
Well, it's one of those weeks, Westy. When we lose, we get a full mailbag.
Oh, get used to that, Mark.
Oh yeah. This is the era that we're in, and we will be talking Stam and season expectations and a great many things in the next few minutes. We'll start off with Andy from Thatcham, who's emailed in. Always happy for people to email in at thetarlhurstend@gmail.com. Says, hi guys, love the podcast, keep up the good work, thank you very much. After the Sheffield United defeat, it sounded like Stam was blaming the players for not implementing the game plan. So which is it? Is Stam's plan too confusing, or the players not supportive of it? Are they not good enough, or should we just give credit that Sheffield United are much better than Reading at the moment? I think the final point of that is correct.
Yes, Sheffield United were much better at Reading at the moment, and you can have as many game plans as you like, but if you don't get hold of the ball anytime soon, it's going to be very difficult to implement. Again, I think that there's a lot of changes happen to that team week in, week out. I think I was listening to the radio the other day, and there's a group of people that do a poll before a game, and they put a couple of quid in, and they choose the team, and whoever gets the team picks out the money.
Oh yeah.
And at this group, if I don't know how many, well, I think it was about 10. No one's got it right yet. So that goes to tell you that the team swaps and changes very often. And I think if you're going to have a game plan, then at some point you're going to say, right, this is my team that I'm going to pick. I know you get injuries. I know some listen at home saying, well, they've had injuries. Yes, they have had injuries. But I think you need to say, this is their position and I'm going to stick with them for 5-6 games and trying to get a settled team that know what everyone else is doing. And we've had a lot of changes to the team this year. Obviously, a lot of players that have come in and are starting.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think you need to say, right, okay, you can have the position for a couple of weeks. Let's see what you can do. But we don't seem to do that ever.
No, well, he's also changing the actual game plan a number of times.
Yeah.
He's not sticking with, oh, we're going to pass it around week in, week out. We're actually going to have a couple of weeks when we're going to play on the counter, or we're going to play 4-3-3, we're going to play 3 at the back, we're going to be a bit more fluid. And all of these things, I think with Premier League quality players, they remember what you tell them and it's easy and they'll go and do it on the game. But during a championship season, 46 games for championship players, it just goes over their head sometimes.
Yeah, and also with Premier League footballers, and I think we all witnessed it this week. Anyone watched the Chelsea game against Watford? And Watford were absolutely all over them for large parts of that game. They missed a couple of sitters. Chelsea weren't in the game, but Premier League footballers will get you out of trouble where they score goals that they probably shouldn't and you won't see. Unfortunately for Reading, we're not having players that will score goals full stop, let alone worldies. They're just not putting a ball in the net. But then we're not creating a lot of chances, are we? And I think he needs to look at saying, you know what, this is my team, this is what we're going to play. And yeah, sometimes it's horses for courses, but in general, people need to know their positions and not swapped about so much.
Was he right to blame the players? Because he did sort of say that the players, you know, when they don't do certain things, when they don't get the basics right, this is what happens. Is that the players' fault? Was he right to say that?
I think it's a fair comment. I mean, he knows what he tells them. We don't. If he's not seeing it out there, then I think sometimes they need to be told. I mean, I was having a conversation before I turned up here and I was on listening to Talk Sport and the Rangers manager was on and he was absolutely slating his players, saying to him that they'd embarrassed him and embarrassed the club and embarrassed himself. Now, my friend said to me, he said, would you do that if you was a manager of a football club? And I said, do you know what? I think sometimes players are a little precious in the fact that they get upset too easily. Now, if you've gone out and had a football game for your park team and you've come off the pitch and you know you haven't given it everything you had, and someone tells you that, you should look at that as a boost to you to say, you know what, I didn't do my best. Not, I'll tell you what I'm going to do next week then, I'm going to try even less harder, and you're going to get the sack. Do you know what I mean? He's only saying what the fans are looking and can see for himself. So if you say the players didn't implement my game plan, if they didn't, then why not tell us?
Well, Stam also knows that he's going to be the one that gets sacked.
Exactly, he's get the blame for it.
It's not going to be Roy Bewins who leaves, it's going to be Stam.
Nope.
The flip side of that is that Stam is the common denominator with all of these things going wrong. He is the one who, you know, takes the flak, etc.
Do you think, can I ask you a question very quickly, do you think Stam cares if he gets a sack or not? Because he doesn't give he doesn't show in himself that he's that worried if Reading were to sack him.
He seems to me like someone who's very confident in his abilities, and therefore if he was to be sacked, it wouldn't shake that confidence.
No.
I don't know how easy he thinks it will be to find another job. Maybe he thinks he can go back to Holland or something else and has a plan B, but I don't get the sense that he's, you know, clawing at every chance he has to keep.
He's not worried, is he? Because, like I say, if Stam was to get a sack, then the whole world is his oyster. Do you know what I mean? It's not like an English manager who tends to stay in England. With Yap Stam, he's played in Italy. He's well known throughout the world. He would pick up a job.
He could go to China.
In a second.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that. Well, Andy Johnson said he's fed up with Stam. Ooh. He thinks it's boring, negative, and now unsuccessful tactics. Would you forgive and welcome Pardew back if he could be persuaded?
No, I don't like Pardew. I never did. I thought his tactical decisions sometimes were shocking and his substitutes were worse than Stam's. So, no, I wouldn't welcome Pardew back. And no, I wouldn't forgive him.
Well, I think if he could be persuaded, I think that's purely the size of the cheque you're signing him, isn't it?
I'll be honest with you, Mark. If he come back tomorrow and we started winning games, I wouldn't care who was in charge. Really, I would not care. And I don't think anyone does. I don't think anyone gives a damn who's in charge of Reading as long as they're winning games.
No, I agree. I mean, the whole forgive Pardew thing. The thing is that, realistically, if you bring Pardew back, I know he'd do the same thing. If he saw a better job, he'd go again. And I think that's probably a sign of the times as opposed to a sign of a manager.
It's if you were given a better opportunity, a higher opportunity, any of us would take it. Do you know, I think football fans live in a bit of a fantasy land where they think that this isn't a job for people. Pardew wasn't a Reading player. He got no link to Reading other than we gave him an opportunity to coach. He done well for himself and he said goodbye. And every player on that pitch would do exactly the same thing. Which just make me laugh when they say, oh, Lampard and Gerrard and Terry were all very loyal to their club. They was loyal to their paycheck. They was getting
also very successful clubs.
Very successful clubs. Yeah. We're winning every week, pretty much, and they was paid a fortune. I would be loyal to that as well.
Yeah, it's very easy to be loyal. I think it's also important to remember that if West Ham came in for Stam tomorrow, he'd be off.
Of course he would. And who would blame him?
Not me. Well, Theo says, why doesn't Stam trust Sam Smith, the academy striker, who he understands is a youngster, but if we don't have any other strikers, surely he deserves a chance?
Again, I think we discussed this a few weeks back. I've seen Sam Smith on a couple of occasions. I didn't think he was anywhere near ready to play for the first team. Now, I know there'll be people sat at him screaming, saying, well, no one's scoring goals for Reading, but is Sam Smith a better player than the players they've got on the pitch? I'd argue probably not. Not to say that he won't be. And I wouldn't, even if you brought him off the bench and gave him 20 minutes, I don't think anyone would complain about it. In anything, it buys you extra credit with the fans.
Well, that's the thing. We've seen this before from the club, haven't we?
Because they're prepared to let a young player play and not do very well. And they give manager a little bit more time if they're putting sort of homegrown players on the pitch.
Oh, yeah. It curries favour.
Yes, it does curry favour.
But I think he was worth a go. The thing is with the Sheffield United game is that you're playing a team that's so good in a large sense that it almost doesn't matter who you're putting up front, because unless you can get the ball to him, you mean, I may as well have played up front against Sheffield United. I still wouldn't have done any less or more than anyone else.
No, when we was well out of the game, I mean, I know we scored the last 5 minutes, but let's face it, no one see that really coming. After that, if he'd have chucked him on, or if he'd have chucked him on 10 minutes before that, then I think everyone thought, well, at least he's put a striker on the pitch. Whether he'd done well or not, it wouldn't have made the blindest bit of difference. I'm surprised if you're going to put a player on a bench that often that you don't give him 15, 20 minutes sometimes.
Yeah, I think the start might have been a bit much, but I have to agree that substitution would have been... I don't see what you got to lose when you're 2-0 down,
no,
especially away from home. Hoops actually has written a piece on the website about Sam Smith. It'll be interesting to see if he starts against Boa on the weekend, but I doubt he will.
No.
I don't see it happening. But I mean, yeah, if he's there, I would throw him on and give him a few more minutes that he's getting at the moment. Scott Graham, speaking of substitution, said, why did we bring on McShane when looking to come back from 2-0 down?
Great question.
Because of reasons.
Yeah. Unless you can stick him up front and use him as a bit of a target. Again, it was a bit of a random one.
I think technically speaking, it was to take Blackett off and move back to a four or into a five or something at the back. It was some sort of tactical switch in the defence.
I don't understand why you put Blackett on. As I said before, he switches off far too much for me. And I think a lot of the problems we have is because he switched off and he addressed them last week against Leeds and then put him back in the side the week after.
Well, yeah, there's... You're searching for logic here, Westy.
I don't know. I'm just putting the question out there, I suppose.
Lloyd Wall says, it's all about home form. Let's get that right. The crowd have got to give support, but it starts with the team performing. On the positive side, if we can find the championship messy in the January transfer window, is anything possible? I mean, didn't we kind of get a good championship attacking player in the summer in Sonny Aluko, as we've discussed?
Yeah, and Bob Vardson come in as well. And I know we haven't had Kermigan, and Bob Varson's been in and out, and again we've spoke before about the fact that I'm not sure he really likes him. Let's get things right. It is about home form, it is about winning at home, which we've done last year quite successfully. Yes, the crowd do need to get behind the team, but Reading fans notoriously will pick a negative when things are going badly. I'd fear for Reading on Saturday if Middlesbrough score first, let's put it that way.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Because it's at the position now where people have, they've seen last year, they've given success, let's face it, no one thought we was going to get. We missed out, unfortunately, on penalties. And now this year we've started badly with a side that's cost a lot of money. And you'd have thought, and I still think, that there's enough in that side to be a good top half championship side, easily.
There's goals in it, there's defenders who know their trade. If you organise them properly, then it should be relatively straightforward to get at least mid-table.
There's a good side there waiting to get out. It's just whether it will or not.
Well, in terms of January, I don't see us pulling up any trees, unless we can pick up some sort of Premier League player who's been discarded, like Naki Wells maybe doesn't get a game at Burnley, we can pick him up on loan. I don't see anything else happening.
No, they get a striker on loan, that'd be about it.
It's also terrible in terms of budgeting for signing in January. Alex Everson asks, what is the expectation for this season now?
I'm still looking up.
I know this. Can't look down, can we?
I'll tell you what, it's a podcast of saying things that are wrong. I still, and I think it's just fans in general, I always think, you know what? I always look at a league and think, where's sixth position? Oh, it's 10 points above us. Well, that's not insurmountable.
No, absolutely.
And it's not. And I think if they could get it right or get it back to somewhere near where it was last year, I don't think they'd have too much trouble moving up the league. But again, the more the games run out, the more you start to worry about it. But I think there's a good team there somewhere. They will find it.
Yeah, my expectation is for just a bit more entertainment. I know, understand that you're not really expecting too much in that regard, but I just think that it reminds me so much of the Brendan Rodgers year when you had the first few months and it was pretty awful, then McDermott came in. I'm not saying a manager has to change for that to happen, but even when we finished ninth, I think it was, under McDermott that first time he came in, it was an enjoyable second half to the season. Yeah. You could see progress happening. That's my demand, to be honest.
Yeah.
Expectation-wise, maybe it's a bit more pessimistic.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, like I said last time I was on the podcast, I think we're all relying on Kermit coming back and being somewhere near what it was last year. And I think that is a worry, because I don't think he will be.
Yeah.
Maybe he is, man.
Well, Matthew Everson, potentially of a relation to the previous question asker. Why does Stam continue to change things? I think we've sort of covered that, as to we don't know. Do we write this season off to keep Stam and Progressive's way of working, which will risk him leaving at the end anyway?
He will leave at some point. We discussed it before. Whether he's successful or he fails, he will be leaving. I can't see him being here more than three seasons, one way or another. Do we write the season off? No. I think we've got, over 90 points still to play for.
Yeah.
They're more than capable of doing well in this league, and I think they will. Like I said, I think there's a good side there somewhere. It's just finding it. So, yes, I'm not writing the season off, and it does change things too much, which we've discussed.
Yeah, the thing is with Stam and progressing his way of working, I think that the next manager we're going to get in is going to be of a similar footballing philosophy, because it's obviously what the club want in terms of who they've hired. Adkins, Rodgers, over the years, they've always been trying to nudge into this sort of philosophy. So do we keep faith with him for the moment? Maybe we'll see after the next two home games, we'll have a clearer picture of that, and we'll discuss that in a little bit, but for now, I don't think sticking with him and then him leaving isn't the worst thing ever.
It never is, though, is it? I mean, I think we'll worry when we've got a good manager, they're going to leave. But in general, within 4 or 5 seasons, whoever's took over has done relatively well as well.
Yeah.
I don't, when I was a kid, I used to really hate it when sort of the best players used to leave and that. And as you get older, you think, do you know what? Someone replace them. It's no big deal.
Especially at this level.
Yeah, no, someone will replace you. As long as you've got the money and you've got a club of Reading size, you're always going to get an half decent manager or someone who's willing to take the job at least.
Well, hopefully. And XX Legend XX, it's like a PlayStation username, isn't it? What is our best midfield? Last week we had Edwards and Vandenberg, which was a good balance. This week where there was no balance, is it with 2 or 3 central midfielders? I'm going to go in and say that I wrote a piece on the website a few weeks ago saying it's 4-2-3-1 with Vandenberg and Evans / Bakuna. And then you'd have just behind the striker, someone like a Luko, Kelly or Edwards.
Again, I think it's three centre backs as well, if I'm being honest. But the problem is with that is we've got a lot of wingers we've bought, and it doesn't bode well for them if you play that formation. But again, sometimes you just got to pick the team that you think can win rather than the players you think can win it. And
depends on the opposition.
Yeah, I think especially away from home, I think you've got to pack the midfield, pack the defence, stop teams scoring against you, and then try and catch teams on the break. Even if you've got 2 forwards in that, you know.
Yeah, well, Luke Jarrett said there's 3 things that we learned against Sheffield United. We need to play a striker, defenders shouldn't play on the wing, and Aluko shouldn't play central midfield. As you know, we talked about Aluko, defenders playing on the wing, you know, if we push Gunter or Black out wide, it does make sense in a way for when you're playing at Sheffield United and you've got three centre-backs and, you know, relatively advanced wing-backs who do cover the defensive aspect of it, but the organisation doesn't seem to be there to actually make it work.
No, that's right. And again, if you're playing 3 centre-backs and 2 wing-backs, it wouldn't hurt to play wing-backs who are more attacking players than they are defending. I said before about Gunter, yes, he's a good right-back. I don't think he's much of a wing-back. I think attacking-wise, he lacks a lot of ability to put a decent ball in and commit players. So it wouldn't upset me to see 2 wingers play as wing backs or 2 more attacking players anyway. And you should be able to shuffle a defence when you're playing 3 centre backs, because if you're playing Blackett in it, you can obviously shuffle him as a left sided centre back and then move him to left back, and then whoever's playing right wing back comes back and plays right back. It's quite flexible formation.
Yeah, definitely.
But that needs organisation, and you'd have thought one of the best defenders in the world would be able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think with Gunter, the more you limit Gunter's game, I think the better he is. I think the more you say, just when he was playing at left back against Leeds, just play left back and, you know, try and focus on covering the things that you're not naturally so good at. And I think he gave a good performance, and that was because it was just a simpler task for him. And when he plays for Wales, very easy job. Just sit in there, run hard, do the little bits, and then if you need to get forward, then go for it. But it's not that essential.
No, he's got a good qualities, don't get me wrong. I'm not picking on him in general. I'm just saying, but if you're going to play with wing backs, I don't think he's much of one.
Well, yeah, I think Bakuna maybe is a more attacking wing back.
Yeah, definitely. I think Popper's would be a good option as a wing back player.
Yeah,
I like Popper.
Gets up and down.
Yeah, I like Popper. I know there's a lot of rumours this week about him going to Panathinaikos or Greek.
Yeah,
or somewhere.
He's out of Romania though, as well.
Yeah. I don't see why he'd let a player like that go. I think he's got plenty to give. We just haven't seen a lot of it at the moment.
Well, we'll move on to talking about the weekend ahead. And we've got 2 home games in a row now. So perhaps the next version of this podcast will be talking about how we've claimed 2 victories in any other business.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Any other business.
So we'll start on the prediction league, and well, you can tell in my voice that it's not been too good for me personally, but it has been very good weekend-wise for Tom Crocker and Johnny Williams, who both predicted 2-1 away to Sheffield United for the home team, and they've moved top of the prediction league with Wim on 7 points, Handbags and yourself, Westy, on 6, and myself back on 4.
Lots of points to play for, though.
There are, and you know what? The reason I'm bringing this up now is because I've calculated if our predictions were correct, if every game that we said was going to happen happened as it was, I thought that we'd be on 21 points, which I didn't realise I was going so high.
Wow.
Tom says 20, Wim 17, yourself 16, Johnny 15, Handbags 10, which is relegation form.
It's not good.
We're actually on 12, so you can tell how we're all just aiming a little bit higher than we are actually getting at the moment.
You know, every year in the prediction league, in my head, I think, right, I think they're going to beat, but I can't say it, so I'd go, say a draw.
Yeah, that's what I keep saying, draw. And as we just discussed earlier in the show, we ain't drawing at all.
Yeah, so drawing is a poor prediction anyway, just based on logic and stats.
Yeah, true, actually. Yeah, so Bow at home next weekend. I've got in bold on my sheet here, middling is the word I'd use to describe Middlesbrough this season.
Definitely. That, again, I thought they probably would be one of the teams that would go straight back up. They had certainly got the squad for it, and they spent plenty of money on other decent championship
strikers. Strikers, yeah.
So it's a surprise that their stats are baddie, but again, there's another side there in the same sort of mould as Reading, that you know that there's a side in there that's capable of beating anyone on their day. And if they have one of their days, they will hammer somebody. But at the moment, they don't seem to be able to get it right. Whether that's the same problem we got, where they've brought in a lot of players that have mixed it up a bit and they just can't seem to get settled, I don't know. But there's plenty to worry about, I'd have thought, for Middlesbrough.
Yeah, well, Hassan Belonga's got 6 goals already this season. They're struggling to find a partner for him, as far as I can tell, because Bamford, Braithwaite, Ashley Fletcher have all, you know, not played that many games and have all come off the bench a lot. So I can tell that they're quite inconsistent with their team selection. They've still got the sort of core of that Premier League team. You're talking Ben Gibson, who was talked about going to Chelsea over the summer. Fabio, Stuart Downing is still there. George Friend. Lewis Baker in central midfield is one to watch, because that's one we were definitely trying to sign over the summer.
Yeah.
So in terms of, he'll definitely get a goal. Yeah. He's the one for that.
I can guarantee that, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the stats, I was looking through the stats, it's just, there's nothing really to pick out. The only thing that I can really say is that they're the second most fouling team in the league, so maybe that'll be a feature on Saturday. But they've also conceded only 9.9 shots per game, which is the second best in the division, which suggests that there won't be many chances on Saturday.
No, and there hasn't been many chances for Reading in general anyway, so you'd be concerned about that. But it's not about how many chances you get, it's about when you get them, taking them. And we don't know what we're doing at the moment, whereas they have got players that you would have thought will.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to restrict them quite a lot. And I know Mr. Samba Long has had plenty of joy against Reading down the seasons. Mm. So he's going to be the one to watch. I think he's lost a little bit, Samba Longa, through some of his injuries.
He has a lot of it, long-term injuries, isn't it?
He's had a lot. And I was watching him when he played for Forest last, and he looks like he's lost a yard, but he's still got plenty of power.
Yeah, and he's making up for lost time as well, which is always very dangerous as an opposition player.
And I just think that it gives our defenders plenty to worry about if he plays.
Yeah, well, we're looking at, in terms of the bookmakers, hashtag gamblerware, as we love to say on this podcast, Reading are 23-10, which is above 2-1 for a home game against a team that are middle of the table. That is good value, or just a sign of the times?
It's just a sign of the fact that we've not looked very convincing at home all season, really, apart from the game against Villa, which we just managed to scrape a win when we should have handled it. So yeah, so it tells you the bookies don't rarely get it wrong, and on this occasion it doesn't look like half there. They're sort of splitting it. They're not really sure who's going to win it, but they're fancying Borough a little bit more than us.
Yeah, Borough 7-5 best prices according to Odds Checker, and draw is at 12-5. In prediction league terms, and just in general, how do you see this one going?
Well, I'm not going to go for a draw because there's no point. I'm still going to I really want to say Middlesbrough win, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to say Reading will going to nick this one. 2-1.
Yeah, see, I'm going to have to go with Boa 2-0, because I can just see this being the game that tips a few people over the edge. It's so hard to call, isn't it? We have absolutely no idea what Reading team are going to turn up, let alone the questions over the opposition.
No, we just hope that they're brave enough on Saturday to not be too concerned what noise might come out of the crowd.
Yeah, well,
that's the test.
I don't think Stan will be. It's the players, isn't it?
That's the test, because if things start going badly early, I think some of the members of the crowd might turn quite quickly, and I don't want that to happen. So I just hope that Reading can get in the lead and have a convincing performance.
An early goal will settle down that game so much.
Yeah, they need a performance at home where people not only enjoy it, but Reading can get a win out of it. And I think that could help turn things around a bit quicker.
Yeah.
Let's face it, if we come out of this with 4 points or 6 points, 2 home games, then it'll look a lot rosier for a little while, won't it? So let's hope they can do that.
Absolutely. It's Forest at home on the Tuesday after, isn't it? So I think four or six is always what you're looking at for those two home games. And do you foresee a circumstance where Stam is not in charge after those two home games?
I think there's always the potential that if you don't win games, you will get the sack. I think if those games are close and Reading maybe nick one and lose the other, I think it'd be okay. If we were to take two embarrassing humblings, then I think the Chinese owners would have no option but to fire him at the end of the
games. If the attendances are very low in those games as well, because it's realistically only one of them, probably the Boa game, is going to have a decent attendance, if at all. And if both of them are, you know, 12,000-13,000, then that's going to be a big alarm bell going off.
Yeah, but like we've said it on this podcast many times, the football hasn't entertained anybody. Even third place finish wasn't entertaining. I think there's one game last year that I actually sat there and thought I really enjoyed that, and that was Fulham at home. And that wasn't the one that was called off.
I don't know what I was watching then.
But yeah, that was it. So yeah, they do need to make things better. Either results-wise, you can play Bournemouth football, wins games, I don't think anyone cares about that. But if you're playing Bournemouth football and you're losing games, people do tend to worry about that.
Yeah, and I think history, looking back at how Rodgers was sacked, he had two home games in a row. First one, we got dismantled by Victor Moses, Crystal Palace. The second one, we conceded a late equaliser against Scunthorpe. And this is, you know, we're looking at two very similar games to how those featured in that season. And I think that I don't expect him to be sacked, even if we do lose those two games. But I think my personal support for him is going to be largely hinged on how we play.
Oh, definitely. And again, like I said, it's a matter of, have you learnt your lessons from the previous games? What we're going to do up front, God only knows.
Yeah, I think that's a good... God only knows. I think the club should have that for the tagline for selling tickets.
Yeah, that'd be nice. What we're going to do this week, God only knows.
Well, on that note, I'll thank everyone for making it to the end of the podcast and for listening. We'll be back at some point next week. I can't tell if it's going to be on the Monday or Wednesday, either side of the Forest game, but we will deliver episode 142 in due course. And thank you for listening. Two home games now, so turn up, cheer on the boys, and come on your arse.
This biscuit.